She and her mother shopped in silence, spoke little in the train, little again in the carriage which met them at Dorking Station. It had poured all day, and as they ascended through the deep Surrey lanes, showers of water fell from the overhanging beech trees and rattled on the hood. Lucy complained that the hood was stuffy. "The crush when Charlotte gets in will be abominable," she remarked, for they were to pick up Miss Bartlett at Summer Street, where she had been dropped as the carriage went down to pay a call on Mr. Beebe's old mother. "Can't we have the hood down?" she demanded. And her mother, with sudden tenderness, said, "Very well, old lady. Stop the horse." And the horse was stopped, and Lucy and Powell wrestled with the hood and squirted water down Mrs. Honeychurch's neck. But now that the hood was down, she did see something that she would have missed. There were no lights in the windows of Cissy Villa, and round the garden gate she fancied she saw a padlock.
"Is that house to let again, Powell?" she called.
"Yes, miss," he replied.
"Have they gone?"
"It's too far out of town for the young gentleman, and his father's rheumatism has come on, so we can't stop on alone," was the answer.
Lucy sank back. The carriage stopped at the rectory. She got out to call for Miss Bartlett. So the Emersons had gone, and all this bother about Greece had been unnecessary. Waste. That word seemed to sum up the whole of life. Wasted plans, wasted money, wasted love, and she had wounded her mother. When the maid opened the door, she stared stupidly into the hall. Miss Bartlett at once came forward, and after a long preamble, asked a great favour. Might she go to church? Mr. Beebe and his mother had already gone, but she had refused to start until she obtained her hostess's full sanction, for it would mean keeping the horse waiting a good 10 minutes more.
"Certainly," said the hostess wearily. "I forgot it was Friday. Let's all go. Powell can go round to the stables."
"Lucy, dearest?"
"No church for me, thank you." A sigh, and they departed. Lucy followed the maid into the rectory. Would she object to sitting in Mr. Beebe's study? There was only that one fire. She would not object. Someone was there already, for Lucy heard the words, "A lady to wait, sir." Old Mr. Emerson was sitting by the fire, with his foot upon a gout stool.
"Oh, Miss Honeychurch, that you should come," he quavered,
and Lucy saw an alteration in him since last Sunday. Not a word would come to her lips.
"Miss Honeychurch, dear, was so sorry. George is so sorry. He thought he had a right to try. I cannot blame my boy, and yet I wish he had told me first. He ought not to have tried."
"If only she could remember how to behave." He held up his hand.
"But you must not scold him."
Lucy turned her back and began to look at Mr. Beebe's books.
"I taught him," he quavered, "to trust in love. I said, 'When love comes, that is reality.' I said, 'Passion is sanity, and the woman you love, she is the only person you will ever really understand.'"
He sighed.
"True, everlastingly true, though my day is over, and though there is the result. Poor boy, he is so sorry. He said he knew it was madness when you brought your cousin in, that whatever you felt, you did not mean. Yet," his voice gathered strength, "Miss Honeychurch, do you remember Italy?"
Lucy selected a book, a volume of Old Testament commentaries. Holding it up to her eyes, she said, "I have no wish to discuss Italy or any subject connected with your son."
"But you do remember it?"
"He has misbehaved himself from the first."
"I only was told that he loved you last Sunday. I never could judge behaviour. I suppose he has..."